Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Ann Packer's newest novel, Some Bright Nowhere, marks a profound return after a decade. It tells the story of Elliot and Claire, married nearly 40 years in a quiet Connecticut town, facing the toughest chapter of their lives when Claire's long-running illness draws toward its end. Over years, Elliot has taken on the role of caregiver, tending to the sweetness and sorrow of the everyday and the extraordinary. But in Claire's final days, she makes an unexpected request, one that sends Elliot spinning back to ask, how well did I know her? And how well do we ever know the person beside us? Ann Packer is the author of 5 previous works of fiction, including the best-selling novels The Children's Crusade and The Dive from Clawson's Pier. Her short fiction has appeared in The New Yorker and in O. Henry Prize Story anthologies. Again, the name of the new book is Some Bright Nowhere, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Ann Packer to this week's book show. Ann, thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you on the program.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here.
I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this novel and how satisfying it is to read. I'm curious as how the idea got on your radar.
This goes back almost 20 years. And just kind of in passing, I heard about a situation like the one in my novel. I heard about a woman who was dying. Her husband was deemed inadequate to the task of taking care of her. And her 2 close friends came and did the job. They took care of her. That's all I heard. I didn't hear details. I didn't know anything what the people were, what they were like, what their circumstances were, but it really stayed with me. I found it kind of nagging at me. I understood the sort of the idea of the women taking care of women. I could see that appeal, but I also was so concerned for the husband, like what was his experience and who were these people that this could have happened? And so I had to play around and see if I could invent characters who would embody this story in a way that was interesting and make for a compelling work of fiction.
Well, one of the things that makes it so compelling is that Elliot is at his heart seems to be a good guy, a guy who's trying to do the right thing. He may not always do the right thing, but he's certainly trying.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I didn't want to make this a story about a husband who deserved to be sidelined. And I also didn't want to make it a story about a wife whose wishes were unreasonable and who was always unreasonable. I mean, for me, the interest is in 2 decent people coming to a point where they suddenly are at odds with each other at the sort of most crucial and meaningful moment of their lives together.
One of the things that also struck me was that because it's such a long marriage, that these are 2 people who, for the most part, can say the things, communicate the things that bother them that they know may get under the skin of the other person, but they can still communicate it. They're not going to shut up about it.
Right. And in fact, the what actually happens is that Claire gets this idea and communicates to him, this is what I want. And then she kind of walks it back. And the sort of issue for Elliot is, what do you do with the knowledge that the person you love most has a dying wish that you actually have it in your power to fulfill? And he makes the decision to give her what she's asking for. And then there are, lots of complications and fallout from that.
There are several aspects to the story that I want to touch on. One of them, of course, is the friends that come in to help. And these are friends who know her, who know Claire, and who know Elliot as well. And they have a history together. And some would say, I think in reading, yeah, maybe they even know each other too well.
Is it possible? They know each other very well. And in fact, there's a moment in the book, I think, where Elliot, the 2 friends are Holly and Michelle, and Elliot sort of thinks, Actually, Michelle is his closest friend too.
Right.
It's a very, very long acquaintanceship. And so there's a lot of feelings for him. There are feelings that they're betraying him, even though they're doing what he's doing, which is trying to accommodate the dying wish of someone they love dearly.
There's always those things that we have friends of a husband and wife or a couple have friends that are mutual, and when they leave the party and you're getting ready for bed at night, you may say, "Can you believe, did that person?" And Claire and Elliot have had those conversations about these two women. So in some respects, Elliot has sort of the intel of how Claire feels and is wondering, well, okay, but if you have those concerns, why in the world would you ask for them to take the reins?
Sure, at different times throughout the novel, I think different sort of objections occur to him, sort of almost like arguments he could make, but he keeps coming back to the sort of incontrovertible fact of Claire wanting this and wanting it at a time when she's not going to want very more, many more things in her life.
The other aspect that's so important is the children and what they think and how they are taking this as well. You write this as having a huge impact on what happens within the story.
Claire and Elliot have two adult children, a daughter, Abby, who is married, has children, and works as a pediatrician, and a son, Josh, who's younger and still sort of drifting as he's turning 30. And both of them are really taken aback by what they hear their mother wants. And they have the struggle then of whether to try to step in and, mediate or stick up for their father, because again, they're coming up against the same thing too, which is this is the last wish. This is what she wants. They adore her. Is it really appropriate for them to try to get in the way of this?
And of course, and this is the way you've set it up, but it's making these characters have to grapple with such a huge decision at the worst possible time as someone is nearing the end of their life.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly it. That's sort of the crux of the matter. All of this is taking place at, the final moment, really. And that's what propels the wish, and that's what propels the urgency in the characters around Claire to sort of figure out how to handle it.
The novel is Some Bright Nowhere by Ann Packer. It is published by Harper. The idea of the passing and the fact that this is an illness that has been going on for a long time, and that Elliot really has been there for every twist and turn. And then to suddenly not be a part of what it's been all leading up to, the passing, is something that this character continues to wrestle with in ways that I think you beautifully explore, because it's anger, it's tears, it's the depths, and it's trying to go to a friend's house or fly out somewhere to try to get away from it, and you realize you can't.
There's no getting away from it. I'm in my 60s, and I've been close to a few people who have had diagnoses like this that ended up being terminal, and watched sort of the way time and illness weave together, not just for the person who has the illness, but for the family and close friends around them. It's something we're all going to encounter. If we're lucky, we won't encounter it up close. But it was important to me to represent the nuances of that kind of time, those kinds of days and weeks in the life of a family.
what makes the novel to me brilliant is that it's completely plausible, and yet you can't fathom it that someone would ask
Right.
that.
And she's been inspired by something that she participated in as a supporter. She had a close friend who was, farther along in the terminal phase of a breast cancer diagnosis. And when that friend was in her final days, was in hospice, Claire was part of a group of women who gathered around and offered love and support. And it was a sort of transporting experience for her that, not really with a lot of forethought, she thinks, oh, that was beautiful and meaningful, and I want that for myself.
And to realize that that would be different for everyone, right? I mean, that's what she comes to learn of that this is going to affect any person who does it's going to affect them differently.
Exactly. And I don't want to give the book away, but the sort of the dynamics of a situation like that and the way it's different for each participant becomes, something that the characters really wrestle with and that they change their thinking about over time.
I can try to think of a flowery way to ask this, but I'll just do it bluntly. But
Just blend.
yeah, is there is it a bummer to write a book like this when you're
Oh,
dealing
no.
with cancer?
Not at all. Not at all. For me, it's funny. It's a question that I've been asked a lot, not just about this book, but about some of my previous work that has dealt with people in really emotionally stressful situations. It's not like that for me as the writer. What I'm always thinking about is the sentences, and if I'm happy with the way I'm building the story. I've also been asked, is it therapeutic? It's also not therapeutic. I'm the builder, I'm the contractor in a sense, not the people who are going to move in and live in the house.
As the contractor, though, you're aware of what can go right and what can go wrong.
You're aware of what can go right and wrong in the building. Like, don't take any shortcuts, make sure the walls are sturdy. You're also aware as a human being of what can go right and wrong inside the house once it's built.
And that's up to the characters that are also in that house.
Exactly. And it's up to, I guess, even more, I would say it's up to the reader, it's up to each individual reader. What it feels like to live inside that house.
I was telling my wife about this book, and it's such an interesting premise, and we were talking about it, and I said, but it never to me became a book of like you're going to be Team Claire or Team Elliot. It's hard to take sides because both are very understanding.
It's lovely to hear you say that. Many readers have taken sides. It's been really interesting seeing who takes which side. If I had to generalize, I would say that so far, if someone's going to take a side, if they are older, and I'm not sure what the cutoff would be, they are very sympathetic to Elliot and a little irritated by Claire. And if they're younger, they view Elliot as deeply flawed and Claire as doing something that makes emotional sense. So it's really, you don't set out to write a campaign between your characters, but
No, of course not.
in some ways, it's I mean, it's flattering if they seem real enough that people want to take sides.
But it's interesting to me and just what you've described that it is not gender related, that it is more demographic and age related.
Well, so far, ask me again in a month or a year or whatever, but
Sure.
so far, that's how it seems to be shaking out.
And for people who are, and as you say, no cutoff in this, but for people who are older, There is a sort of, I guess, what is built into us of the responsibility of the vow that we take of in sickness and health, that you take that to the very end.
I think so. I think that empathy grows as we grow older, and also the importance of compromise in looking at human relations also may grow. Now I'm gonna, get all the young people angry here, but
While you were writing it, were there times where you had to calibrate to make sure that it didn't go in one way or another, that there was something that was said or that there was something that was done that would not be irretrievable to have us wanting to support or understand a character?
I certainly needed to think about balance. I would say in the very first draft, I was more sympathetic, or I seemed maybe to be more sympathetic to Elliot. And I did a lot of work to make sure, or to try to make sure that that Claire's wishes were understandable and clear and sympathetic. And again, I don't want to give the ending away, but Claire herself undergoes, a real journey in how she thinks about what she's asked of him. And toward the end, she starts thinking differently about her own desire.
And of course that goes with the stages of the illness and of where you are, and you so beautifully. I think anyone who's been through this knows the frustration of the timeline of how long does this person have, and that 3 to 6 months, and Elliot is screaming at some point, "Well, what is it? We've already done. We just did 4 months. What?" And not to have that come off as that you want it to end, and you want your loved one to pass, but just when is this going to stop?
Yes, and can I have one iota of control
Right.
over this thing that over which I have no control? I think the yearning for a timetable really addresses the helplessness that we all feel as we're watching someone we love suffer.
You mentioned it in the novel, and I thought about it a lot, but the caregiver and the caretaker, and those essentially mean the same thing, and yet they are the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We do tend to use both words, but the fact that one ends in give and the other ends in take is pretty revealing. And Elliot in the book, at one of his low points, is sort of asking himself, was I really her caregiver, or was I more of a caretaker? And in his view, the caretaker is not as emotionally involved. He thinks, a caretaker is somebody who takes care of your house while you're away.
Right. And you probably have to be both, right? I mean, that's what you have to be at some point, both.
Yeah, taking care, giving care. It's a big job. It's a big job, and it's a very demanding job. I think, only now, or in the last, I don't know, 5 years, have we really sort of started a conversation about what the costs of caregiving are. And I mean, the emotional costs, the physical costs, there's so many of them, the opportunity costs.
Ann Packer is our guest, and the name of the book is Some Bright Nowhere. Not to mention the fact that, in general, and I generalize this, but we're not all that great about talking about death.
So true, so true. And, somebody in another interview asked, what do you want readers to take away from this book? What do you want them to be thinking about? And my first annoying answer is, oh gosh, whatever they want. And that is absolutely the true answer. If someone engages with my book, that's such a gift to me. And it's theirs now. It's not mine, it's theirs. That said, I think you're right. I think we do shy away from conversations about death and also about dying. And that it's, I think it's helpful when we wall something off because we're afraid to talk about it. I think it's helpful to try to take that wall down.
These are also two characters that, and I touched on this earlier in an earlier question, but they're not shy about saying what's on their mind. What they say can be quite penetrating and quite acidic.
They're direct. I mean, I think it's kind of a testament to the strength of their marriage
Right.
that they're able to be that direct with each other, up to a point. And, that point is sort of what the book is about.
You write this, and I mentioned in the introduction of returning after a decade, which obviously you've been very busy in that time since, but of what it is like to return to the form of the novel, and at what point you make that decision and say, okay, now's the time. Here's a story that I want to invest in.
I am always thinking about writing and usually writing. And by that, I don't mean, in terms of hours in a day, but days in a year. And there was a different book I was working on for a long time, which is why it's been 10 years since the previous novel was published. That book absorbed me and confounded me and interested me and upset me, frankly, for many, many years. And it was kind of just a deep breath and saying, let's move on to something different. Let's set this aside for the moment and move on to something different. And one of the things about that other book was that it had multiple points of view, multiple time periods, and not consciously, but when I started this book, I was delighted to find myself working in a single point of view. In fact, there was an iteration that I started and abandoned in which I thought I would get all the points of view, the wife, the friends, the husband. And that I set aside also. And it was only when I thought, okay, this is Elliot's story that that it really took off. And it was really a pleasure to be working in a sort of a simple structure.
I was going to say that not as a this certainly is nothing but a compliment, but that there is a simplicity to it, that there's this question and you come down on it of okay, now you have to deal with this thing, which is giant, but it is at the base of it, you can understand, how you're going to feel about it. The taking of Elliot's of using Elliot's voice, and once you had it, did you know that was the way to go?
I did. Normally when I'm writing a book, I don't show anyone anything until I have a full first draft. But because of the experience with the other work, after about 40 or 50 pages, I just thought I've got to see if this is how this is reading. And my husband is also a writer, and I gave it to him. And he did two fantastic things for me. He said, "This is great, keep going." And he said, "I think you're going to need an all-male space for Elliot to be in some of the time." And that prompted me to invent what became very important to the book, which is that Elliot is in a cooking club with men, all men.
And they have some connection to other characters, and sometimes not. But it is it they're together, and like all things like that, they sound really, really fun when you make the appointment to do it, and then when you actually have to go, you think, oh God.
Well, he definitely has ups and downs in his feelings about it, but for me, as the writer and the creator of the dinner club, as I call it in the book, it was all a lot of fun. And just to bring it back to what you were mentioning before, in terms of the sort of simplicity of it, I will tie together this business about the dinner club with that, and say that the entire time that I was writing the book, I sort of had in my mind that I wanted it to be like a knife. And I didn't really stop to ask myself, like, what on earth I meant by like an, I just wanted it to be like a knife. And finally, I finished the book and I thought, ah, I get it. I wanted it to be slim and pointed.
And the other thing too is just even when the character is alone dealing with the for want of a better term, the fallout of a dinner club of figuring out like what's butterscotch? Like what is what how
Haven't we all asked ourselves that question at some
yes,
point?
what how do you do the sugar burning thing again? How does that work?
Right. Are you asking me that as a cook?
No, I think it's
Yeah.
interesting that it's not. I mean, that is a group. That's a group thing, but they sort of
Mm-hmm.
keep their thoughts to themselves. And it's sort of as they're trying, as at least for Elliot, as he's trying at home, like asking all the questions of. So, what is this? How does this turn out again?
How does this work? And I had fun, I think, with that group of men, finding ways for them to sort of intellectualize about some of the simplicities of cooking.
Well, the novel is just brilliant and so meaningful and poignant. The name is Some Bright Nowhere. The book is published by Harper. Ann Packer, I thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Joe. It was really a pleasure.
Again, Ann Packer is the author of the new novel, Some Bright Nowhere, published by Harper. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on National Productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.